I put on some weight recently, so I called Weight Watchers and I asked them if I could have a mentor, and they said yes. So I said, can you send somebody round? And they said, yeah, we've got lots of them.
That took me a while as well. I was looking at his face being like, what? And then as you got it, Bretto, I got it.
For a second, I thought I'd completely bombed.
No, that was good. I just, yeah, didn't see it. I was thinking it was going to be some sort of Mentos joke. Good. I don't know why.
Well, I like that I've been telling so many varied jokes recently that you just don't know where they're going to go. You're like, oh my God, they could literally go either way.
This one was more for thinker. And I like, well, maybe because I just wasn't switched on enough, but I liked it. So no, it was good, mate. And I know that's really all that you care about, right?
You're a thinker.
So Nate, what do you think you've got?
I reckon our answer is like a solid 7, 6 or 7. The delay can't, you know, the delay probably knocked a point or two off.
I'm going to go 8, Nate.
Ah,
because I don't think the delay impacts the quality too much. That's probably just me. So I don't want to hurt. I don't want to hurt you for me being slow. So I liked it. Good work.
Lovely, man. Thank you very much.
But I'd like to mention at this point that before we started recording, Nate said he's running out of jokes, which concerns me for future podcasts.
Just, I don't mean generally. I just mean in the list and on my notes, you know, on my phone. So I just need to go on another jokes rampage. I've still got a few, actually. There's a few that have stored up. And obviously, I've got a flight next week. So watch this space, everyone. Joke time.
There's huge anticipation around Abu Dhabi. And most people think it's for the championship decider that might happen there, but it's not. It's all about the potential for Nate to come up with new original joke content for the winter, because it's going to be it won't be a long winter, actually, will it? It'll be a short one, but it'll still be a winter with no racing where we have to fill lots of time and we need jokes.
Shit. No pressure on me.
But we've got some ideas from some special podcasts over the winter.
We do.
So we will continue to bore you, entertain you, delete as appropriate.
Hang on, wait. We're going to delete people?
No.
I didn't know you had that power.
Let's start. Working for Channel 4 gets you, and F1.
I'm going to start the podcast before this gets crazy. Welcome to The Paddock, a podcast featuring stories following Formula One around the world. I'm Lawrence Brette, senior writer at F1.com.
And I'm Chris Medland, F1 correspondent at Racer.
And I'm Nate Saunders from ESPN.
And Barreto's trying to get this back on the straight and narrow, but there's no such thing when it comes to us in this podcast. No.
Absolutely none.
I don't know what he was expecting, but
what I am excited about, boys, is the fact that we're all going to be in the same country at the same time with podcast equipment that allows us to sit in the same room at the same time.
That is true.
Set us up for a fall now, though.
Yeah, now it's all going to go wrong now, Lazar. Oh, no. Now you've said that. Oh, no. But that is the dream, isn't it? That is next week, ahead of Abu Dhabi. Abdab, as it's known to its friends. hopefully we can do the preview. I mean, let's hope it's a preview for a title decider, because I don't want to go all the way to Abu Dhabi for a dead rubber.
Oh, you don't want to come all the way to Abu Dhabi to see us, Nate? Oh, thanks.
Well, there's that, obviously, but also, no. You know, I don't. It's a long way to go for a race that's just a race, isn't it? It's not a championship decider. As much as I love you guys, I mean, I'm going to see you guys at the weekend after that. So, you know,
that is true. We'll keep that a surprise, shall we?
There's been so many times that we've had to go to Abu Dhabi and it's not a championship decider.
I've only been once to one decider there.
So it's not unusual to deal with that. Nobody's seen Tom Jones.
I was literally about to say.
I know you were. I could see it in your face. It's quite cool that we've got the prospect of maybe having the decider. Whether we actually get it or not, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, even if we don't, we'll make it a fun podcast, won't we?
Yeah. The podcast is probably going to be the best part of the week if it's a dead rubber.
Yes.
That's what everyone will tune into. But we should do. I mean, Matt, a lot's got to happen for Lewis to win this weekend. Sorry, for Max to win this weekend. I mean, amazing things would have to happen for Lewis to win. Maths would have to change. the concept of numbers would have to completely change. No, only Max can win this weekend, but he has to win and Lewis finish sixth or lower. Is that right?
Actually, just to pick out a... so for that, it's he has to win with fastest lap and Lewis sixth or lower, I think. But yeah, and then it's seventh if it's no fastest lap. But anyway, ignoring that, you said that Max would need to change, but technically not. Technically, if Max was to do a Grosjean Spa 2012 and cause a shunt that got himself a race ban at the next race, and Lewis had taken the championship lead in Saudi, then he'd be world champion because Max wouldn't be able to score a point at the last race. So that's the only way I want to look at it, because obviously there are other ways that drivers could miss races. But let's,
I mean, that's
we don't
a really roundabout way of looking at it. Is Max near to a ban?
No. Like, Grosjean wasn't near to a ban. He just got one for apparently affecting the title result, didn't he? It was
listeners.
That was kind of harsh, really.
Chris Medland says Max Verstappen's going to get a one race ban and lose the title. Or imagine if he got a one race ban and Lewis had to finish like second or something to win the title. That would be dramatic.
And it was all on Checo. Surely
it was all
would.
On Bottas. Bottas is like, new. Sadly for Bottas, he wouldn't be able to keep Lewis behind him for too long, but it would be fun while it lasted.
It would be good if he had to win it. You're right. Like, imagine that, almost like a, not a time trial, but yeah, Lewis just has to go and win. And it's just Perez against Hamilton for the weekend in a strange way. That would be odd.
It'd be odd. Lewis would win that easily. So yeah, that does sound, the more you talk about it, the more bad it sounds. The more bad? Good Lord. I'm not doing very well at talking today, guys.
Today?
But no, anyway, so Medlin's pedantry aside, Max can win this weekend and Lewis can't unless numbers change before then. So
you heard
watch
it hit
that space.
First. There we go.
So watch that space.
Well, no, the whole point was we're going to be in Abu Dhabi together, able to record a podcast as long as the podcasting equipment makes it, because I have been learning about the joys of customs forms to be able to take this stuff to these last few races. But assuming it gets there, because again, I don't want to disappoint people if we have to tell the story of where my podcasting equipment's impounded in Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia and it never actually reaches us. So again, assuming that doesn't happen, then we'll get to record together and talk.
What happens if we all turn up, but you've got a one race ban and then we can't do it? What would happen then? You've just, the FIA has banned your pass for a week. We haven't considered that.
I could still do it remotely, couldn't I? Like this.
Yeah, but we wouldn't be on the same location then, would we? It'd have ruined it because of your ban, because of your reckless journalizing.
I did nearly get a ban, actually. Not quite, but I was naughty in Qatar, I will admit.
What did you do?
So there's new rules for going on the grid, right? Where you can only go as media before 20 past the hour. So just so the pit lane would open at 20 past the hour and close at half past, and then you have half an hour of grid time before the race start. But because all the mechanics and VIPs and team members and stuff rush onto the grid after the pit lane's opened, media have to be on either 20 minutes like before the grid opens or after the grid opens. After the grid closes. So you can't basically try and get in that 10-minute window between 20 past and half past the hour. And I had 1 minute to spare when I got into the pit lane in Qatar, and being a new venue, didn't know where the gate was onto the grid from the pit. So I was in the pit lane, but didn't know which way to go. And I followed two people from the FIA thinking they knew where they were going, and they were just going for a wander to look at some cars. So a security person did come and said, you need to either get on the grid right now or go into the paddock. I was like, yeah, I'm trying to get on the grid. Where's the gate? And they're like, oh, it's back here. Come this way. I'll take you. And took me most of the way, but then took me to the door where you can go back into the paddock and said, I'm going in here, but you can go through that gate there onto the grid. So I'm like, great. And they said, be careful, because by now 20 past hits, so you can hear cars fired up and they're going to move down the pit lane. So I run over to the gate to get onto the grid, and Formula One say no. They're like, you've missed the window, you can't come on. But all it is to make sure you don't create a bottleneck with all the mechanics and teams, and you know, you don't want people like all bumping together in really tight confined like space, even though it's outdoors, but you know, piling through this small gate onto the grid. So I had to stand on the pit wall for 10 minutes and stay out of their way while everyone went in. And it was great. You could watch everybody, see all the VIPs, got to see Pirlo, Beckham, who else was there? Torre.
So you actually ended Schmeichel. Up with a better view by not doing what you were supposed to do.
By breaking the rules.
Yeah.
Indeed. I then got told, you know, don't do it again, which I will not. But yeah, it was an interesting view.
The grid is chaotic, though. I remembered that going back in for Brazil. I was like, oh my word. You just forget how many people are just running around. And ultimately, the media are some of the few people there that actually don't have much reason to be there other than just gawping at cars. So I nearly got flattened by Brundle's camera a couple of times. And I was like, what am I doing here? But it's good fun to be back. But I remember that. I'm pretty sure I went on just before the cutoff. in Brazil. So good one to remember.
Tight. It is tight. Yeah, you're right. For us print media, it's kind of, yeah, there's not always a huge amount of value. There sometimes is. You see things happening and you can react to it. And
also a really good chance to catch up with people, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone that you wanted to speak to, they're almost certainly, and they're high profile, they're almost certainly going to be in the grid. So it's a good chance to grab them.
And quite often it's a bit more relaxed, yeah. I remember finding out Grosjean was leaving Lotus to go to Haas on the grid in Singapore, talking to Eric Boullier, just because it had been, you know, it was some random French rumour. And I asked him and he was like, actually, yeah, this morning he said. So you're like, oh, great, thanks, story. But yeah, for TV purposes, it's more fun. So I get to do that the next two in Saudi and Abu Dhabi. I get to do the grid walk with NBC again. So
cool.
Hopefully I'm not banned, because that would be embarrassing, wouldn't it, if we're just about to go on the grid and they're like, no.
You're just shouting it from the pit wall, like, yep, and that's, there's another car in the distance. I see it. I can see it.
Breaking news, they're arriving on the grid, and they've stopped on the grid.
They've arrived.
Yes.
I think Saudi's going to be absolute carnage with that circuit. I was looking at it today. It could be a wild, right? Like a Baku style, just complete and utter madness.
I think there's more chance of that because it's so close to the end of the season and there'll be so much at stake. Because at first I was going to say, yeah, but we thought that with the first Baku and everyone took it easy, expecting carnage, and it never happened. And yeah, maybe people take it easy again if it's a tricky track and stuff. But taking it easy is just leaving a tiny bit more margin than normal, you know, to respect the rules and stuff. But at this stage of the season, they can't afford that at all, can they? So that could get really tasty, actually. I'm quite excited for it.
Yeah, same. I mean, a new venue, there's always that new element of unpredictability anyway. So this, with walls being right next to the circuit, it's always a good sign. I think I've held back making any predictions because I don't want to be the guy that says, yeah, this is going to happen, and then you fail to predict the craziest race of all time or something.
I like the layout, and the fly-through that I've watched looks pretty cool. So I'm just looking forward to getting there, running the track, seeing what it's like.
It looks like a quick lap.
It looks like
both for the cars and for you, lads.
No, not when I'm running, but for the cars. Yeah, it looks proper high speed, isn't it? So it should look pretty dramatic under the floodlights.
I'll race you.
Bring it.
We'll go for a run. Actually, you'll probably beat me. You're running better than I am.
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Anyway, but yeah.
Speaking of you doing all right, Mr. Barreto, you know what I'm going to tangent into now, don't you?
I think I do, but I'm going to let you do it just in case.
You've been doing all right. No, you've recently done one of the coolest gigs I've ever seen somebody do in Formula One, and I want to hear all about it. You basically are Kimi Raikkonen's best friend now. And you helped see him off into retirement two races before he retires.
I gave him a really early send-off.
Yeah. But no, so it was an event in Switzerland, right? Was it in Hinwil for Alpha?
It was at Hinwil, yeah. I've never been to Hinwil before.
It looked incredible. There was a lot of people there, but you were basically interviewing Kimi on stage, which is a rare treat these days.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed interviewing Kimi. He's always put me under pressure in a positive way, because you never quite know what kind of Kimi you're going to get. He's either going to be in a good mood or, you know, not so fussed mood. And so I went to Switzerland after the team asked me to host what they were doing, like an internal staff party for the factory-based staff. So they'll do something else for him at the track, but there's hundreds of people who obviously work so hard to put the car together over the course of the year that don't really ever get to see Kimi or the drivers. So they put this event on and they asked me to host it, really. And it was, like you said, Nate, probably one of the best things I've ever done. I was slightly worried that, because it was a surprise, they told Kimi to come with his family to meet Bayat Zunder and just have a catch up to run through a few things. And then they would go for dinner. So they kind of didn't tell him that this whole event was going to be put on. So I was slightly worried that he'd obviously turn up and not be that keen to be involved. Because obviously the whole thing was about him and he never really likes being the centre of attention. So I was a little bit wary. And then what they did is they had a red carpet that weaved its way through the wind tunnel. So they've got quite a cool event space in Hinwil next to the wind tunnel. And then they marked out this red carpet and they got all of the staff to stand either side and kind of give him like a guard of honor and like a clap and some whooping as he was walking in. And I thought, oh, I don't know if that's like Kimi's bag. Like, I'm not sure if he's going to be that keen. But you could see in his face when he walked in, like he was slightly overwhelmed by, I think the reaction to it, and that set him up perfectly for having to then come and talk to me on stage for a fair while, really. So he went to a little table in front of the stage with his two kids, and I think they were a little bit overwhelmed by like the noise, and there was just so many people there. But he was very sweet with them and kind of spent a little bit of time kind of like just chatting to them and kind of making them feel a bit more comfortable. And then I said to it, then I invited him onto stage and he took his mask off straight away. This is the first time I've seen Kimi Räikkönen's face all year. So I was like, oh, if he's taken his mask off, he must feel comfortable enough to talk to me. So then I relaxed a little bit and he came up on stage and we had a chat for about, I guess, 45 minutes.
Wow.
Interspersed with, we had a load of video highlights. We found a load of social media clips where he basically had a great time hanging out with Robert Kubica and Antonio Giovinazzi, listened to some of his favorite radio messages. And I thought that that was a lot of things to basically just stand and watch. But he really engaged with the content, kind of told stories or gave memories of, oh, I remember that moment. They've made this up and they pieced it together. It didn't really happen like that. So he kind of really got on board with it. And then when people were kind of engaging with it, he was trying to explain to them what was going on. He was the most animated that I've seen ever, I think. And I thought that was really sweet. And then we had a message from Sebastian Vettel. He got invited but couldn't attend it, so he sent a video message, and he started off by saying, I'm just holding the microphone. It was one of those lapel mics. He was like, I knew you wouldn't be bothered to put this on properly, so I'm not going to bother either, and I'll try and keep this short and sweet because you're probably not going to want to listen to all of this either. So it was quite relaxed. It was quite how you imagine they get on really well. You can understand why they get on really well. He told a great story about Sebastian Vettel, where the first time they met, they went out to a bar, and the guys around him were trying to get him drunk, and Kimi was taking the drinks for Sebastian. He kind of was acting like a bigger brother, put his arm around him, and that was kind of the start of a really great relationship that they had. I think they're probably, of the two that get on the most, Kimi's probably best mate in Formula One. And then I gave him the stage. I said, is there anything that you want to say? And he just went, you know, gave like this really inspiring monologue about how he's sorry that he doesn't get to see the guys, but he knows how hard they work, how much time they spend for him. And they're all pulling towards giving him the success. And then he went off stage after we did a little toast at the end and came back on and said, oh no, I've got more to say. And then just went on and on, like chatting to the guys. And then after the stage bit, there's about, I'd say 300-400 people there. He took a selfie or did an autograph or just chatted to every single person in that room. And I just thought that was brilliant. I just thought it was, it says a lot about, so he might not really come across as someone who really cares, but I thought that the way he carried himself at that event, the way he spent so much time with everyone, that he took so many photos, did the autographs, and spent so much time just whole there in the evening, just really shows how much Formula One means to Kimi, how much the people around him mean to Kimi. And I just saw another side to him that I just thought, you know, we don't get to see enough. Not that he really bothered about that, I think, but I just wanted to be able to tell other people about it because I just thought it was a very cool event.
Big question though. Huge question here. Mm. Do you think he was actually surprised? Because if it was meant to be a surprise, your Instagram stories telling him you're on randomly on your way to Switzerland, like ahead of time, he's surely going to be looking at that, mate, and thinking.
And I think he lives and breathes by your Instagram updates,
mate. I'm not sure.
As we all do.
I'm not sure that Kimi follows me on Instagram. So,
I mean, to be honest, I think the fact that they were like, yeah, can you come to the factory with your wife and your kids and probably dress up nice for dinner and just come at like 1 p.m.
Maybe
to me I'd be like, yeah, okay, I get where this is going.
Maybe he knew that something was up, but I think he genuinely was overwhelmed by the reaction and the genuine love for him. The talking to a lot of the guys and girls who were there, they worship Kimi, and you can see why that drives them to do the job that they do and work the long hours that they do, because for them, if they can help Kimi Räikkönen succeed, that's a huge thing for them. So
sounds amazing, man.
Yeah, it was cool. And then Mintu on her Instagram story stole my final line and put it on there on her Instagram story.
No way.
Yeah, in a, I'm not saying that in a bad way. I was very honored that she she chose.
She used, didn't steal. She paid homage.
Yes. So was it your line in the sense of you said it out loud on stage,
yes,
or the line you? Oh, okay,
yeah.
But
so
you
I
also
said
then
it.
Used it in your story, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, that's true. I did.
You finished off with being like, you can read my work on Formula1.com, Chris Medlin's work on Racer.com. And Nate Saunders' work on ESPN.
I'd love it when you invite Kimmy up, he's like, welcome to the pack. Wait, no, hang on.
Yeah.
But also, mate, the fact that Kimmy opened up so much as well is a testament to you, I think, as well. The fact that he likes you. Because a lot of the time with Kimmy, people have always said that if he thinks that you ask him a good question, he'll open up. Mm-hmm. If he thinks you ask him a dumb question, or if he thinks you've asked him dumb questions before, he kind of just doesn't give you time of day. So I think that's a really good feather in your cap that, like, A, they picked you, and B, he was receptive to you. Because there's been times when people have done events like that, and I've heard stories about, you know, some certain people at, like, former bosses at Ferrari who were paired up with certain journalists they didn't like, and they just gave the person hell, you know, when they were doing their, like, leaving speech or whatever. So yeah, that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, I feel really lucky that he reacted like that. You're making me blush.
Cool. Proud of you, man.
Thanks.
That's easily the coolest story we've had on the Padhawk.
It's a good job this is audio version only, because, you know, there was the sight of Beretta Wenger blazer over a t-shirt, which we'll let slide, seeing as it was a Kimmy.
I had a tribute shirt t-shirt and everything. I had a white shirt and everything, and then I thought, oh, I can't be the only one in this room not wearing a Kimmy t-shirt, so I got involved.
Did you get him? You've got a pretty cool collection on your at your home of things on your wall that have been signed and memorabilia. Did you get anything you can add to that collection?
I haven't, but I did then print a photo off that I'm going to take with me to Saudi Arabia and ask him if he would do that.
Yeah, awesome. Good call.
Because I thought that would be, hopefully he won't mind, and that would be a nice thing.
Oh, no, of course not. Especially as you were there, and if it was a special moment as well.
I would love it if he's just like, I saw enough of you last week. Not get away from me. Yeah. Like, we've done this. Like, you've had your time. You know, I fronted up for a good 45 minutes there with you. That was a lot of effort.
You will not have the drink.
He's certainly not afraid to say, oh, I've just spoken to you already. Do I have to talk to you again? He's definitely said that to me before. So, yeah. And we did a toast on, I wanted to do a shot of vodka to finish off the toast, but we had to make do with champagne, but he seemed to enjoy that, so.
Yeah, tough life.
Yeah, tough life these F1 drivers live.
I know.
And these F1 hosts, F1 event hosts as well, not just the drivers.
Yeah, but I mean, nice that you got to kind of raise a glass. And I guess, like, if we kind of pivot slightly, we should probably mention raising a glass as well to Sir Frank Williams, who there'll be someone else who'll get a lot of tributes, I guess, over the next two races, passing away on Sunday morning, which was, I think, wasn't really unexpected, was it? The way his health had been recently, but really, really sad news to lose him, because to me he's like one of the key pillars of the sport. He's someone who, when I've known it, he's been there forever. But also, you've got to go back a long way. No offense to anyone listening to this who can remember, but you've got to go back a long way to remember Formula One before Williams and before Frank was involved. So it's a really, really sad, but some beautiful tributes that came out as well. This is a bit where we kind of fall a bit flat, because I know for the three of us at our age, we didn't get that many opportunities to spend time with him or see a lot of him, because Frank wasn't coming to so many races in the later years. But Beretta, I know you've done a lot of work with Williams in the past. I've done some hosting and things with them. And I always remember, one thing I do remember was the first interview I did that was F1 related, like on site. I was at uni and I contacted Williams asking to speak to Frank about how hard it is to get into Formula One as a new team. And I know he'd done it a long time before. This was kind of about 2010, I think. But it was a uni TV project I was doing, and I thought his input would be excellent. And, you know, as a team owner in his own name, kind of the aspect he could have on it. And, you know, unsurprisingly, they were like, he's not available. He won't be in at that time. But they gave me Adam Parr instead, who was good for it. But I'll admit, I was a little bit like, oh, would have been cooler to have Sir Frank. And then I did get a little tour afterwards. I remember thinking it's so cool to walk into the factory and see the Williams name above the door. But then I got a little tour afterwards, and they showed me his office, or like where it is, but said, you know, he's not in today. And I remember leaving a little bit deflated, that because at that point I had no idea if I'd have a future in F1 career or anything like that. That might have been my only visit ever to an F1 factory, for all I knew, certainly to the Williams factory. So I remember feeling a little bit deflated that I never got to sort of see him and meet him because he was an absolute hero. Like, Williams dominated when I first got into F1, and when I think of F1, I see a Rothmans livery Williams. So, yeah, I'm really glad that I actually managed to make it and meet him a few times and see him. And he was just so cool, so inspirational for everything he went through, both like on and off the track.
It's no secret that I've got a lot of time for Williams. They kind of operate a sort of open door policy. They're very welcoming. I think they open, you know, they've always been open with us, I think, the media. And I think that came down from the top. I think Frank just got, he just got it. He got that everyone was there because they had a job to do, but they were there for a reason. And I think that that's why that team's often described as a family team, because he really cared about everyone who worked there. I know when they were trying to sell the team, a big part of what they were going to do is, did all of those staff have jobs, you know, at the end of it? And, you know, that comes from the very top. Of course, he was a hard racer, and I'm sure he did some really tough business deals and stuff. But ultimately, he just cared about going racing. And I only got to meet him a couple of times. I went to the Grand Prix Mechanics Trust when I was doing some writing for them quite early on in my career. And they were hosting it in that exhibition centre where the museum is. And I walked in, and he was like, hello, so who are you? As I walked in. And I was like, so I explained who I was, and he just stood there chatting to me, basically interviewing me, you know, trying to find out a little bit more about, you know, who I was, what I was trying to do, why I was working at the Grand Prix Mechanics Trust and stuff. And he didn't have to do that. Like, he didn't have to chat to me. And I just thought that was a really nice touch. And then you'd see him afterwards, and he'd remember, you know, you wouldn't always have in-depth chats, but he would say hello to you and you'd see him and stuff. So yeah, so I've got a massive, soft spot for Williams and the team. So, yeah, I'll miss him.
You're right about the Rothmans livery. You know, that's one thing I think of as well. And it's kind of crazy in a way for us, like growing up in the 90s, Williams was the team. And I remember, like, you know, there was that crazy year when they suddenly went, it was like Winfield Williams in 98, not being good anymore. It was a little bit like Manchester United in football recently. Like, they went from being the best team to suddenly just being, you know, another team. It was like, oh my God, like, this is so weird. And I think for newer fans coming in, I hope that the kind of the tributes convey just how big and just how dominant that team was, because it's easy to look at Williams now and think, okay, this team doesn't really do anything. But it's almost why it's such a crazy story that they're in the position they have been in recently, because they were that team before. So yeah, he'll be missed. And I think Bernie Eccleston said it best. He was like, you know, F1, the reason it's as successful as it is today is because of guys like him. So I think that's a huge testament to what he did. So he'll be missed a lot, and hopefully Williams can go out with a high result or two in these last two races.
Yeah, it's nice that this year at least has been an improvement and a step up, and that they're kind of back on a path towards better things, because, yeah, it certainly deserves it. And I'm sure a lot of people are motivated to kind of do that in his name. So yeah. It'll be nice as well that we can sort of all get together for the last two races, and there'll be some tributes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some big names that have been lost this year, haven't there? So it'll be really interesting to see what some people do and say. But yeah, it was sad news, but a really nice opportunity to kind of reflect on what Sir Frank gave F1. So I know that's the paddock being kind of normal and not taking the piss out of something, but yeah, he was an absolute legend.
And good as well. I know it was a strange circumstance, but looking back at it now, super nice that Russell got that podium in Belgium, you know, because, you know, Sir Frank would have seen that. And yeah, it was a weird way to get it, but it seems kind of apt now that they had that, the final year. So yeah. Nice way for us to pay tribute. I think it's a nice thing to do. And we don't always just take the piss out of everything. It's also worth remembering. Certainly not when it's something like this.
There's a good point actually about with George, because for sort of Williams, that's exactly what the team did a lot, was like a British mark with British drivers that kind of like stood out as that kind of team. You and I, Nate, we got to, you know, throw in a segue here, but we got to have lunch with a British driver, not George Russell.
Yeah.
But lunch with a British driver last Friday, didn't we?
And it wasn't Lewis Hamilton either. So which one could it have been? It was Lando Norris. yeah, it was really cool. It's always nice when you get a driver in that kind of environment, isn't it? There was about maybe 10 of us, maybe less actually, but just kind of, you know, good chance to have off record and on record chats. And I don't know, Lando, I'm sure you guys remember, but the young kid that came into F1 as a rookie was really shy. And you were lucky if a transcript of his would be, you know, longer than kind of a couple sentences each question. And now when you talk to him, I mean, he's only just turned 22, and he's I think he's finding out a lot about himself, and he's quite frank and quite honest. I mean, he's a really likable guy, I think. Very easy to root for. But yeah, there'll be a lot of stories about Lando over the, you know, tonight and tomorrow, and they'll probably come from that round table. But yeah, some really cool stuff in there. And I think he's actually become one of the elite drivers of F1 this year.
Well, what we're going to do is it will be tonight that you'll see stories, but that's because, you know, we'll just hold this till an embargo list. But the huge news that we're there for, which actually, to be honest, in our little world wasn't particularly big news, was that, well, that's cool for Vlad to do, was that he was talking about the fact he's moving to Monaco over the winter. And he was so honest. This is what was great. I mean, it was clearly, you know, there's PR backing for it, where they're thinking, best thing we can do is front up and be honest about this. So we all had this big lunch in central London. And he was like, yep, like, it's probably for the reasons you'd expect. Like, I've got to think of my future. You can see drivers who don't have long careers or how quickly it can change. Like, you know, it might be going well for me right now, but I can't predict the future. And essentially, yeah, he's trying to make sure that he cashes in as much as he can right now when he's earning good money from F1, so that it sets him up for the future rather than he wastes it. And he won't be the first or last driver to do that by moving to somewhere like Monaco. But yeah, he was really open and honest about it, which was very good of him, actually, because you could just tell the way he's talking that he was a little bit... there's still stuff he loves about the UK and home and things like that. You know, he's got a lot of friends nearby, and is it Max Huitrell, I think, who he roommates with at the moment, and that sort of stuff, where it's, you know, it's a big change for him. Like you said, the confidence that he talks about not having previously when he first came into F1 and stuff, to now be at a level where he's like, yeah, I'm going to move to Monaco, is a big step, actually, I think, on a personal level. So
yeah, big step.
He was very open about it, wasn't he? He was really engaging for the whole afternoon.
Yeah, he was. And it's, I mean, you know, when someone moves to Monte Carlo, you know the reasons why, you know, and the fact, but then a lot of people, like you said, kind of try and spin it maybe a little bit. So the fact that he was just like, you know, yeah, financial is a big thing, I kind of respect, because I think I even said it to him when we were chatting. I was like, most of us in this room would do the same thing if we were in your situation. Like, and anyone who says they wouldn't is lying to you, because there are benefits to doing it. So like, the fact that he was honest about it, I thought, yeah, you know, fair play, because a lot of people haven't been. I'm sure people use it as a stick to beat him with if he makes it big, because that seems to be the way that things go. But yeah, it was nice to do that on an off week, I think. Have a little chat with Lando.
And what did you eat? I mean, you've said lunch several times and you've not told me what you ate.
You're just desperate to know if it was a burger or not, aren't you?
Yes. It wasn't a burger, mate. A lot of people had steak. I had salmon, very which nice. Was delicious.
It was a steakhouse. It was a very nice steakhouse, and they went for fish.
I made a big error. I ordered a Guinness.
there was that too.
And so that turned up, and it was not a good idea. I was bright red by the end of the meal. I was just completely full from Guinness, and it wasn't really, I mean, don't have Guinness on tap if you're not a Guinness place. That's my 2 cents to finish with.
It was I had steak. It was soup and steak. It was very nice, and dessert.
Everything as well, but I just had a massive pint of Guinness with it. So basically four courses instead of three.
But yeah, it's very cool. And Lando was excellent. He was on really good form, good fun, chatted about a lot of different stuff that, you know, different websites and news outlets will run over the next few days. But yeah, cool thing to do. And yeah, then he had to shoot off for a weekend away, and we just decided to hang around with the McLaren comms team and get a bit of a headache. At least I did. Nate went off to... Nate thought, now Lando's gone. Yeah, none of these people are worth my time.
So. Main event's gone, then, you know, the second act had to go, which is me. So that's how it is.
Wow.
Yeah, on that note.
I'm sad that I didn't meet up with you guys, but I'm going to ignore that and probably wrap this podcast up. Thanks very much, chaps. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thanks to everyone who was listening as well. Remember to hit the subscribe button and follow us on our social channels. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Medes' work on Racer.com, and my work on F1.com. And we will do this again very, very soon.
Look forward to seeing that on Mintu Raikkonen's Instagram very soon. Bye.